WNA Trailblazers is proudly brought to you by Davies Chocolates, makers of handcrafted Australian chocolates since 1932. Now gluten and palm oil free. Visit davieschocolates.com.au and order your selection online for speedy delivery to your door.
You know, when I was in finance, I'd come across these amazing people in their career or their business or whatever it is. There's an expectation if you're good at what you do that you're automatically good with your money and you're good with your money management. And that's actually completely 100% not true. There was a lot of embarrassment, shame around not being all over it. And so I wanted to create a safe space to have a real conversation around money.
That's Rebel Money Coach Melissa Maher, who wants us all to get comfortable talking about money. And this is WNA Trailblazers.
WNA. Women's Network Australia.
Trailblazers. Amplifying the stories of women in business. Hosted by Women's Network Australia CEO Cheryl Gray and Louise Poole, me, managing partner of podcast production company and official Women's Network Australia media partner, Welcome Change Media. Is one of those taboo subjects that we're conditioned from a very young age to avoid talking about. And our relationship and attitudes to money are getting embedded right around that time someone is telling us money doesn't grow on trees. So it's no wonder we don't feel comfortable talking about it. That's until we meet someone like this episode's trailblazing guest, founder and CEO of Talking Money, also known as the Rebel Money Coach, Melissa Maher, who wants us all to get comfortable talking about money. So Cheryl, let's talk about money, or getting comfortable having conversations about money at the very least. It's tough, isn't it?
Strangely, it is. It's one of those things that we don't like to talk about. Even when we've got money, we don't like to talk about it.
It's like up there with religion and politics, isn't it?
Well, yes. I don't really understand why, but certainly conversations where we talk about money in the sense of money management and how we deal with money, but we also tend to use money as a benchmark to judge success. So we seem to have a love and hate relationship with money, and it challenges us in many ways.
Like thinking about even when you're an employee for someone, so many employers go, oh, don't talk about money. You can't talk about money with other people that you work with.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
How can you compare?
And in fact, that's one of the reasons, it's one of the reasons why we find out that there is a gender pay gap. Mm. One of the discussions that we probably need to have is just what money means to us, not in terms of how we judge ourselves, but how comfortable we are with our financial situation, more so because it does eke into our identity and our perceptions of self. Yeah, it's complex, really complex.
You didn't have to have a whisper conversation with Melissa about money, though. It was quite out loud, no hush-hush around the water cooler.
No. Melissa's very comfortable talking about money, but interestingly, like all of us, had to go through a process herself of becoming comfortable talking about money, and found that, you know, her relationship with money was also a little bit skewed and needed some refinement. So yeah, it happens to the best of us.
Even with 20 years experience in the financial services industry, still hard to talk about money.
Even with all of that experience, because what Melissa talks about is that money, it's the mindset part of money and our relationship with money. It's what we think of ourselves and how prejudices that we bring influence our attitudes to money and financial situations.
Well, let's jump into that conversation with Melissa now.
Hello, Melissa, and welcome to WNA Trailblazers.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
It's a great pleasure. We're going to talk about all things money and finance, but let's start with you. Can you tell me a bit about your career journey and your journey in the financial services industry?
Okay. So I started off at a boutique financial planning firm in Toowoomba, where I grew up. And then I moved to Brisbane and had a career in financial planning and stockbroking. And I worked for a superannuation fund as a seminar delivery specialist. So I had a broad exposure to sort of all things finance. And then my last role was actually back in Brisbane, but with a boutique financial planning firm. So it was actually, I sort of did a full circle of my career, like went and started off a little guy, then went with all the corporates and the banks and the superannuation funds, and then ended with the, a boutique financial planning firm. So that's...
So when you were in Toowoomba and growing up, were you like the tuck shop queen? Did you have all the money sorted out at the tuck shop and everything? Has finance always been in your brain?
It's really interesting. I was talking to someone someone about that the other day of deciding or why. I think one of my kids was asking me why I decided to do what I did. And I think when I was growing up, I always had a bit of a penchant for being a nurse, actually, and going to nursing, which obviously a lot of girls our age did and stuff like that. But I don't know when it actually switched to actually deciding I wanted to go and do finance. So because I sort of did my first year of uni and then just, you know, then had to decide which path I wanted to go on and that sort of thing. And it was, I think it was a lecturer at university that actually probably was a bit of a mentor of mine that suggested that it might be a good idea for me to go and have a look at going into finance. And it was in that days, it was still US University of Southern Queensland was still, they were transitioning into university. So I started doing a Bachelor of Business and then I went overseas for a couple of years and came back and then I could upgrade to a Bachelor of Commerce.
One of the things I know you talk about now, and we'll get to that part of the journey, is our relationship with money. And I think a lot of that obviously stems back to perhaps our childhood, the environment we've been raised in, whether we had money, whether we didn't have money, some of those sort of attitudes, I suppose, that are impressed upon us as young people. Tell me about your situation and your relationship with money.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you, Cheryl. I sort of had a big career in finance, but a very big part of my career was always really connecting with people, wanting to help people solve people's problems, really support them. So it was there was lots of reasons why I transitioned out of corporate and, you know, and started my own business and that sort of thing. But I think it was, I loved the people side of money, if you know what I mean. Mm. It was actually the really supporting them and getting them to understand that. And it was in, you know, that time in financial planning, that really wasn't the holistic people's dreams and aspirations and stuff like that. Wasn't a big, it was still done, but it wasn't as big as what probably it is now. So I think it was probably more that I loved dealing with people and the aspect how I dealt with that and supported them and did that was actually through money and their finances. And, you know, I was with the superannuation fund for 7 years. So it was very much about supporting people into their retirement years, that sort of stuff. So I probably didn't fully realize it at the time. But looking back, I think I probably started my business for me. Like I had all the tangible finance qualifications that you could poke an experience, you could poke a stick at. But I actually really hadn't. It wasn't until I actually really started my business and stepped into that space that I started realizing the importance of our relationship with money and our money, you know, our money stories, our money programs, our money beliefs, and the fact that they're actually driving the show when it comes to, you know, our relationship with money and how it shows up and presents in our life.
So you had to do a bit of a heal thyself kind of journey.
Absolutely. I started my business and it was, it was all bright and shiny and set up and looked great and fantastic. And I thought, you know, people will be knocking down their doors to come and work with me and, you know, begging and I'd just be like busy and it'd be like amazing and stuff like that. And that actually, you know, that old expectations versus reality, that actually is not what happened. It was pretty much crickets, really. And I had to really think, what's going on here? What's happening? Why is my business not working? And, you know, it's everything I've done, everything I've right. I've, you know, it's all set up. It looks great. On the outside, I'm always the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And our coaches just always seem to come into my life exactly the right time and the right coach. And I started working with a coach. And that's when I really started having a look at my relationship with money, and which, you know, I strongly believe is actually very connected to our self-worth. So I wasn't valuing myself because, you know, I couldn't hide behind a salary or a position or, I'd moved out of corporate and I probably hadn't transitioned as well as I could have out of that. So I was still holding on to that, a bit of that identity. And then, you know, I wasn't selling widgets either. I was selling myself as a coach. So that's, you know, there's nothing more exposed than you can be than selling yourself and your services as a coach. Mm. And so it wasn't until I actually really dug deep and looked at my relationship with money, which is connected to my self-worth, that I actually could start clearing and then go back and looking at, you know, was a big thing that ended my marriage a couple of years previously, like really started having a look at what was going on with all that. And obviously going back, you know, how it was spoken about when I was a child. And so that's really when I started fully understanding about how vitally important is around our relationship with money and our money stories and programmings and beliefs and where it will show up. Because I challenge anyone, it'll be showing up somewhere in your adult life, either how you directly relate to money, how you spend money, how you relate to money. It could be showing up in your personal relationships or it could be showing up in your professional life.
They're really hard conversations, and that's a hard conversation you obviously had with yourself at that time to be able to look at those things, you know, and as you say, well, you've got the qualifications, you know the drill, you know about money, you know about finance, we're doing all the right things in terms of running a business. Yes. Why is this not working? And then having to have that really obviously deep and honest realization and conversation with yourself, that's really tough stuff.
I guess I don't regret having gone through that and having experienced that, because I think when people come and talk to me about this stuff, it's not like a, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, Yes, I've read about that in a textbook. I have actually lived and breathed this probably more times than I actually would like to admit. And, you know, the entrepreneurial's journey or running your own business is always very up and down and ebb peaks and troughs and ebbs and flows and stuff like that. So when people tell me how they're feeling about money or what's going on or where it's showing up or how it's impacting them, I actually understand that. I really get what they're saying.
And I guess that's a really important part of doing what you're doing and being really a coach through people's money journey, because often it's not the money that's the problem. It's the people that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Cheryl, my favourite saying is I come in on the money, but it's never about the money. The money is the effect, not the cause. So you have to go and look at cleaning up what's going on and get that clarity and awareness and efficiency and understanding and flexing your financial capability muscle of actually really getting that clarity around what's going on with your finances, understanding it. But it's actually, that's the external. It's actually going back and looking at our beliefs and conditions and money stories and that sort of thing, which is really, that's what's driving the show. I always love that image of the iceberg where there's just a tiny little tip poking out the water and then there's this huge big mass underneath the water. And I think that's a very apt description of what's going on with money and our relationship with money.
The journey that you've spoken about, Melissa, and that's your journey, but it's not an uncommon one, obviously, particularly in these current circumstances, for a lot of small businesses, a lot of sole traders who have taken the opportunity to start their own business and spend a huge amount of time doing all the things that they need to do to set themselves up in business and then wait and wait and, as you say, crickets. It's really interesting. You know, I've heard a lot of examples where people have been told, just do more marketing, do more Google AdWords, that'll fix the problem. And yet what you're hinting at is that there's a really deeper story around our personal financial story and attitudes. And if we can't unlock that and deal with that first, then no amount of sort of window dressing is actually going to help.
I guess it's, you know, it's looking at that external, looking for that external fix or that external banner. And look, you know, not for a second am I saying there's anything wrong with Google Ads and strategies and marketing and stuff like that. That's also a really, really important aspect of our business and that sort of thing. But we're looking for that external fix. I think a lot of times we're going, okay, if I just do this or if I just do that, if I just do that, if I just find the right strategy or the right, you know, whatever, my business is going to be a success. But the crazy, amazing thing is we've actually got the answers all inside of us. Look, we actually have got it. And, you know, it's just actually really, I guess, clearing out the muck, my technical term for the morning, is, you know, it's clearing out the stuff that's, you know, that we've, you know, our identities and our conditioning and our programmings and everything else that's sort of layered up inside of us, of clearing through that and really getting the gold nuggets and the essence of who we are and how we're showing up and that sort of stuff. And that's, once we can do that, everything else will fall in place. So people think it's external environment that impacts us, which is actually, it's the other way around. It's our internal world and how we're feeling and how we're showing up and all that sort of stuff actually impacts our external world. So it's a completely the opposite way than we actually think it is.
I don't want you to give me necessarily an example that might break a confidence or give the game away, so to speak, but can you just talk to me about some of the types of blockages or scenarios that people who are presenting to you are experiencing? What are the major challenges that people with money challenges are facing?
It's kind of the same but different with every person. The first one that jumps into my mind is a client of mine. She had a very, very, very successful business, very successful bookkeeping business. So, you know, in money, in finances. And, you know, if I asked her to tell me about her business figures and stuff like that, she would have been able to tell me to the cent what was going on with her cash flow and her numbers and everything in her business. But she couldn't tell me where her mortgage was. She was just married and she'd been married for, you know, in a happy marriage for 20 years, her kids, but she couldn't tell me where the mortgage was. She wouldn't have been able to tell me what her mortgage repayments were. So she was completely, had separated herself from the finances, the personal finances. Her husband looked after all the household and personal finances. She kept her business finances very, very separate and just sort of contributed to the family pot. And they'd been doing that for a long time. There was nothing untoward. There was nothing wrong with what was going on. She just was, because of her mindset with her relationship with money, she'd had quite a lot of stuff going on, fairly big things, traumatic things happening when she was younger. And we had to really work through that. And it was all mindset stuff. We had to, you know, really work through that. Then she felt happy that they combined their money and it was like, it was just like paradise because they could actually.
So really it changed their relationship as much as it changed have really changed the financial situation that 100%. Much at all.
Both. Actually, Cheryl, it changed their relationship because he'd been wanting to do that for years because the husband didn't want to be shouldering the load either, to be honest.
No, who does? It's
exactly. Like she was absolving all responsibility, but, you know, having a crack when it wasn't all. working and stuff like that. And so it was like bringing her up, and so you could bring him down so they could work as a team on a level playing field. And one of the, I mean, apart from the big shift in her relationship with money and then with a relationship in their joint money, is that one of their daughters was having a few issues and stuff like that. And because they joined their money together, it gave them such a really clear picture of what was going on, which then allowed them to go make a decision to send her to a private school a lot earlier on, because, and they would have never been able to make that decision without actually having everything together and having a really clear picture of how I went through and supported them to set it up. And she said, you know, she said to me a couple of times, I love that you just take the emotion out of it's just data, it just figures. So you, from me supporting her, it took the emotion out of the numbers, the figures, the numbers around money. It was just information.
Even though, you know, money is numbers, it does have that very strong emotional magnet. It is something that keeps us awake at night. It is something that causes us to worry and experience stress. It can cause arguments. It can cause relationship breakdowns.
Huge.
So it might only be dollars and cents, but there's a lot more attached to it, obviously.
Yeah. And that's the power, the energy, the emotion, the beliefs, and the everything that we bring into it gives it its power, because there's such, you know, it's such a big part of whether we like it or not. It's a massive part of our identity is around money. You know, when we're growing up, we're told, you know, it's not polite to talk about money. Money is a taboo subject. You know, it's talked about in very hushed tones behind closed doors so the children don't hear, and it's not polite, and it's whatever. So we grow up with those sorts of influences and understanding. And then as grown ups, then all of a sudden we find out what's used as a yardstick to define success and status and power. It's money. Yeah. And so we're like at this betwixt and between. Well, do we love it, or do we hate it, or do we fear it, or do we embrace it, or, you know, what do we do? So I think that in itself causes us to have a really, dare I say, an unhealthy or a complicated relationship with money, because we don't quite know what to do with it.
No, I can see that. And it is certainly something that I think most of us don't particularly want to talk about either, because if you've got it, it might seem boastful. If you don't, you might be embarrassed. So you kind of just don't talk about it. But we also don't learn much about it anymore.
No.
I mean, I just think of all of the financial systems that are around at the moment, everything from phone contracts, okay, credit cards, but Afterpay and all these sorts of payment schemes that, as a young person in particular, obviously that can create issues for people.
Yeah, and I think there's just a lot more options available to get credit and do things and get, you know, I mean, everything. And it's not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but people just need to be educated and informed about those things and the ramifications of, you know, not saying, oh, mate, don't worry about paying your phone bill. If you move, they won't find you and stuff like that. And, you know, understanding 10 years down the track when you're wanting to get a mortgage on a home, that could come back and bite you in the bum because you don't have because it's impacted your credit rating. That's what people need to, like, go in with eyes wide open of understanding, no, I don't have a problem with the after, you know, the things and stuff like that, but they need to understand actually what's going on and understand the implications of not paying them or not paying your payments on time. Then what happens? You know, so it's actually doing it with a completely eyes wide open and understanding the implications if you don't honour the repayments or the agreements or the whatevers, how that can have a long lasting and really significant impact on things like your credit rating and your ability to get a home loan further down the track and stuff like that, because you don't understand those, you're not educated about those things.
I had a terrific conversation with one of our Women's Network Australia members, Kimberly Downs, who is an expert in women's philanthropy. And I really enjoyed, she was talking about the conversation she had had with her family around each of them having a philanthropy plan, encouraging her children that as soon as they started earning money, they should think about what their giving plan was, you know, who they were giving to, how much they were giving. And it had actually become part of their sort of, you know, they came to her now by choice and discussed with her their plans as to what their next 12 months of giving was going to be. And I thought that's an amazing attitude. Yeah. Not only that they built in the concept of giving, no matter how much you're earning, but the concept of giving into their way of thinking, but that they also were able to have an open discussion about their money, how much they were earning, how much they were happy to give away to causes that meant something. And they almost had to pitch to her the causes and do the research and understand the organizations that they were giving to, which I thought was a really healthy
that's
and mature
amazing.
a thing.
Yeah.
How do we have those conversations around the dinner table or with the family around money?
Fundamentally, the most important thing is actually to have the conversations around money. Like to know, I mean, obviously that's, you know, different types of conversations based on the age of your children and what, how much you talk about and that sort of thing. But it's actually normalizing and talking about the value of money. There's lots of different things I've always done with my kids who are now teenagers of, you know, going to the supermarket and actually, you know, looking at what things cost per kilo. And,
yes,
you know, they, and they come to me, they still come to me and go,
and then it's per unit or per whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they come to me and they say, oh, that one's on special, but it's actually still cheaper to buy the other one. Cause they actually, that's, you know, cause that's how I taught them years ago about that. And, you know, children actually handling money, touching money. And well, I was actually having this conversation with the other day that someone said something to their kids and they go, well, just go and get some more money out of that wall or the hole in the wall. And, you know, it's funny, but it's not actually funny because they honestly think that that's just an endless supply of money when you go and, you know, get money out of the ATM.
I think what's worse now is you, I mean, I think a lot of us really don't have much cash anymore. Like everything is plastic.
Yeah.
So it's really just numbers on a computer. Even.
Yep.
It's not even a case of money coming out of a wall. It's numbers somewhere that someone controls and they're either, you know, they're either big or they're small.
Or, you know, just tapping your card or whatever.
Yeah.
That that money is explaining the, you know, the processes behind that of where, how we can have that money available to come out of the wall or to tap our card. But there is actually, you know, it's just not an endless, as much as we'd love that to be the case, but there's not an endless supply of money. That, and, you know, that comes back to talking about money, talking about the value of money, getting them to handle money, to go and buy things, to work out, okay, this costs this much. All right, I've got this much. So have I got enough money or not? Or do I get, you know, do I've got change? Or, you know, just the decisions around money and just actually, well, and just talking about it and normalizing it. So when they, you know, when they're grown up, it's just a, because I think that's the people I support in their 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s and stuff like that, is that they haven't had those conversations or that education or whatever. So, which has sort of caused the problem of where we are with our relationship with money now, that it wasn't spoken about, it wasn't normalized, or if we've always got the, all got the throwaway lines of, you know, your money doesn't grow on trees, or you can't be a nice person and have money. And, you know, and it's, they're all throwaway sort of funny lines. But if you actually really think about, for example, if you can't be a nice, good person and have money, like imagine if that's a core belief of yours, you will be repelling everything you can do or getting rid of it, because fundamentally we all want to be nice people and liked and loved. But if you've got a really strong belief that you've grown up with that you will, you can't be nice and have money, that can have a really huge impact on how money, you mean, on your relationship with money and how it's showing up in your life. Or not showing up in your life, actually.
And we've talked about this a fair bit, but you have particularly focused on working with women in the money space.
Yeah.
And we've discussed the tragedy that is women's homelessness, with women aged over 50 being the fastest growing cohort of homeless people in this country, which is just both shocking and unacceptable. And how much has that got to do with the relationship with money?
Massive. There is a myriad of reasons, you know, superannuation and women having time out of the in working place and the gender pay gap, and which is, you know, which are all very, very valid reasons. But I think, you know, for women, there's a whole, with their relationship with money or giving away their power in a relationship about money or whatever, or just, you know, simply actually checking out, like that example I gave before about the, like a savvy, amazing superstar switched on successful businesswoman, couldn't tell me where her mortgage was. It's checking out for whatever reasons, or the, you know, letting that, you know, and I'm not saying that this is right or wrong or good or bad, but it's just, it's disempowering women that, you know, it's all good until it's not. And I think that's a lot of situations. And you and I've heard stories about women that have had successful businesses and stuff like that, but on their personal finances, they've signed things that they, you know, they or agreed to things and that they had no idea what they were signing or doing or whatever. And it's something's, you know, it's gone pear-shaped. And it's actually gone to the point where it's impacted them and they've lost their businesses. They weren't understanding what they were doing. And, you know, it's really, really sad to see that they could even, you know, you could go far as to say that they're complicit in their demise, because they just purely from that lack of understanding, lack of knowledge, lack of what was going on. And, you know, and obviously trusting a partner and trusting someone to be doing the right thing and that sort of thing. But it's, you still need to know what's going on, understanding what's going on. I'm not talking about couples having to get together and make every tiny, minute decision together, but it's actually just having that awareness, not checking out, having those money conversations with your partner to actually know what's going on and making the decisions together.
And yet in some cases we hear that that financial abuse is a form of domestic violence where women and the access to finance, what they spend it on, is really used as a form of coercive control.
100%. I believe it's probably the easiest way to control someone is to take their ability away to live or to exist. I mean, I know firsthand someone I went to school with that was ended up marrying someone and, you know, straight after school and they moved away and he basically took all her credit cards, took all the cards away from her so she couldn't leave the house. So it was a way he controlled her, and her parents ended up having to go and basically rescue her from that relationship because there was no other option available.
Without that support, if you were isolated and didn't have that support, it could be a very different story.
And that's another thing. They'll isolate you from your friends and family. So I think it's a, dare I say it, it's through the money and the finances and financial abuse, and it's a very easy way to control people.
I know one of the things you talk about is creating a safe space to have the conversation about money. And is that because there is often a very strong link between money and personal relationships?
Like, yes, absolutely, what you're saying. But probably the going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier in the conversation is, you know, when I was in finance, I'd see all these, you know, come across these amazing people and they're, you know, were very good at their career or their business or whatever it is. And there's an expectation if you're in society, if you're good at what you do, that you're automatically good with your money and you're good with your money management and you're all over it and stuff like that. And that's actually completely 100% not true. So because there's an expectation around it, there was a lot of embarrassment, shame around not being all over it. And so that leads to people making decisions around money that are not serving them and a sort of a bit of a, you know, spiraling down the drain situation going on. And so that's, you know, when I started my business was I wanted to create a safe space to have a real conversation around money. Like, you know, really pull the curtain back and shine the light on your finance. No judgment, no shoulda, coulda, woulda. Just, you know, let's just have a chat about what is going on right here, right now. And once we do that, apart from it being really empowering, you know, and liberating to do that, then you're in a situation we can educate you, you can move forward, you can start making decisions, you know. But so that was the creating a safe space, a real conversation. But I think very much now it's that and creating a safe space for women to have that conversation around money and things aren't as they should be. You know, I was having a chat with a client the other day and, you know, we'd been working together and she was saying, oh, you know, I'm good with the, you know, the household everyday stuff, but I'm not good with making the big decisions, you know, the big sort of bigger decisions. And, you know, her husband had made those decisions in the past and that, you know, the marriage had ended. And so she had this real identity around not being good with big decision making and working through it and working through the mindset and the money stories and beliefs. And it was just her perception of what that being good with money was like, you know, having to have lots of spreadsheets, having a lot of knowledge, being involved in investing and all that sort of stuff, because she wasn't interested in that. That's why she thought she wasn't good with money. She was actually fantastic with money. She just needed permission to be fantastic with her version of being good with money. And so that's, you know, so we sort of blew that belief out of the water of what she thought was being good with money was about. And so it was just a really interesting reflection for me as her coach to support her through that, but also for her to realize, actually, hang on a minute, I'm really bloody good with money. Like, it's, you know, and I'm okay with my version of being good with money, not what,
can you
know.
Can you give
us
some tips about how do we start this? You know, obviously, something you would be a good start, but how do we even know if we've got a problem with our finances and our attitude?
I think, first of all, Cheryl, it is important to really understand the lay of the land. You know, when I first start working with women, I do a financial snapshot of financial health check of just actually really understanding, you know, line in the sand. Let's actually shine a light on what is going on right now. So, you know, listing out your assets, understanding what they are, listing out your debts, understanding how they're structured, what you're paying, what your repayments are, what your interest rates are, all that sort of stuff. You know, I mean, with women, if their assets, if they've got any investments, it's not just about listing it out. They need to go and actually research it and find out exactly what it is and come back and explain to me what their investments are. So it's not just like I've just got this, you know, we've got this. Okay, well, what is that? I don't know. Okay, well, I need you to go one way and research it and find out actually whether that's, you know, researching
it's
yourself.
The old knowledge is power. 100%.
100%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and understand what your outgoings are and your financial commitments and the flow of your funds and your bank accounts and that sort of stuff. So I think that's to be able to clear the space to actually go and have a look at our relationship with money. I think you really need to get a clear picture of what is going on. So that's, you know, giving that clarity and awareness, understanding of, you know, knowing your numbers and actually understanding what makes up your money pot and how it's actually all working and flowing and interacting and that sort of thing. And then I think that sort of creates the space or, you know, frees up our mental real estate to actually not be consumed and thinking about money all the time and that sort of thing, and just actually going and having a look at our relationship with money. And I think, you know, the most important thing I do firstly is actually, you know, looking at our money stories. So, you know, looking at how how we feel about money. How would you describe our current relationship with money? And probably the most important one is, you know, how was money spoken about when you're growing up? As I said before, I'll challenge anyone that that's not showing up. And, you know, it could be in a good way or, you know, a positive way or a negative way or in a bit of both of, you know, how that's showing up in your adult life. You know, and what was your mother's relationship with money? What was your father's relationship with money? Even, you know, what was your grandparents' relationship with money? Because, you know, obviously we form all our beliefs when we're, you know, very small people and take all these beliefs in with no filter or really understanding what's going on. So we get these, you know, these beliefs are formed before we even really understand what's going on. So it's really interesting to go back and have conversations with our families about it. I've had lots of clients that have gone back and actually, you know, had a conversation with their parents about, you know, I've got this perception of me growing up as a kid or whatever it might have been. And, you know, what was it actually like with you? And there's just been like some amazing breakthroughs, understandings, compassion for parents and actually to really understand as adults what they're actually going through. And it's completely different to what might have been our perception was growing up, which we can then go and take in as adults and really learn and understand and do that. So I think that, you know, really understanding your money story is a good starting place. I call it, you know, it's like a bit of a subconscious dump. I don't want to call it a brain dump because it's not coming from your brain. It's coming from your subconscious. And then really going through and looking at, do we have any limiting beliefs and blocks? You know, what is our, the best way to find that is, you know, have a think about your self-talk, that monkey brain, that self-talk, that internal, you know, continual lovely, well, not so lovely.
The thing that keeps you awake at night.
Yeah, that monkey on your shoulder, like talking to you all the time and that monkey, you know, actually have a think about, well, how do I talk to myself about money or how do I, and actually what comes out of our mouth really about if you continually say, I'm no good with money, I'm no good with numbers. Well, you say that enough, you're going to, and you know, somewhere in your life, someone might've said that to you or, you know, girls aren't good with numbers or something might've been said as to why you've got that. When I first started really looking into this, I used to always say to my kids, oh, we can't afford it. We can't afford it. We can't afford it. And then one day I went, oh God, like, you know, I'm saying it and guess what's happening. And so I completely changed my languaging of actually for myself, but also for my children of, I really changed actually how I spoke about money and was very,
sometimes
very
we use
aware.
Phrases like that to just not make a decision, don't we?
Oh, yeah. You it's, know, like a,
we,
it's a throw
we,
off.
It's not that we can't afford it. It's that we just don't want it.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Can't be bothered or we choose not to, but it's easier to blame money or lack of. And that sort of, well, that rules it out. The decision taken care of. It's not always the case, is it?
No,
but I see what you mean. If you say it often enough, then you truly believe it. And
And where you focus, you know, where your focus goes, your energy flows and stuff like that. So if you're continually, you know, in that scarcity and lack and focusing on what you don't have enough of or what you're missing out on or what you know, whatever that, you're continually focusing there. Our brain goes, oh, okay, you're thinking about that. You want more of that, do you? So it's not, it doesn't differentiate between whether we want it or we don't want it. It's actually what we're focusing on and thinking about. It's going, oh, okay, you want some more of that? All right, I'll give you some more of that, not having enough. And so if we
but there's obviously more to turning a financial situation around other than just saying, I'm going to be rich.
Like going sitting is going
sitting
on a mountain.
A lot more in terms of the techniques.
Yeah, going sitting on a mountaintop and just thinking about that, that's not going to it's not going to help.
It's not going to magically appear.
No.
I mean, I've told myself I'm going to win the lotto a lot of times and it hasn't happened yet. So I'm either doing something wrong, which I am because I'm not buying the tickets.
Well, that's probably your first problem.
So, you know, but, you know, there's obviously more to just turning around an attitude. There's those very practical, and I guess that comes from the understanding of where the money's coming from, where it's going, and how to then make other decisions that really affect the bottom line.
And reframing that negative, you know, I mean, reframing a negative self-talk, that's probably the best, you know, I mean, one of the things you can do once you've done all the, you know, the tangible stuff is actually, you know, reframing. I do, you know, I go through quite a process with clients of turning that around because a lot of times, a lot of the stuff we tell ourselves is that not actually isn't even true.
And hence you founded the business Talking Money because it is all about talking money. It's not just doing budgets.
No, it's not at all. It's all, you mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, doing a budget and understanding and doing cash flows and stuff like that, but it's such a bigger piece that you need the tangible, the cash flowy stuff, but you need the mindset stuff as together. You need to do it together.
I think that's a great place to leave it, Melissa. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and your personal experience around your relationship with money and how you've used that to combine with your financial expertise to really help people to reframe their thinking around their relationship with money. And
thank you for having me.
Cheryl, I loved hearing you chat with Melissa about money because I think we just don't talk about money enough.
The conversation with Melissa just reminds me that we need to have really interesting dinner conversations, you know, with our kids.
Yes.
And we don't probably, if you thought of the top 10 dinner conversations, money is probably not one you'd normally have on your list. But just learning how to not so much talk about money, but to talk about money management, how to understand a phone contract, what is afterpay, what is debt, is it good and bad, how do I know where my money's going, how do I read my bank statement or a balance sheet, those types of conversations that we probably don't have, but techniques to kind of make them interesting and enjoyable and important so that, you know, we don't get stuck not knowing what's going on in our financial situation and start to have normal conversations about, how to manage our money better.
I think that 21-year-old Louise might have needed a conversation with Melissa before she maxed out all of those store cards and had to spend years paying them all off.
Well, you know, even the concept of, money coming out of the hole in the wall, why can't you just go and get more? Which is always an interesting conversation, particularly with young children. But, you know, what is cash? And how do you save money by not getting stung with service fees on everything you spend when you're using your plastic? Yeah, really interesting ways to just have conversations about what is part of our lives. Every day we're spending money and we're earning money, hopefully, but we're just still not talking about it. And for many people, women in particular, it becomes a real sticking point in their relationships, in their financial independence, and unfortunately leading to those scenarios where we're seeing women aged over 50 in that bracket of the fastest growing group of homelessness in the country. And we really need to stop that. You know, financial abuse is one of the first signs, and in fact probably a really powerful sign, in coercive control and controlling relationships, where often women have the money taken away, have the credit cards taken away, have no access to finance, so therefore their ability to leave is curtailed because they've got no money to do anything. They can't control. So money is a really controlling factor.
It is. Like, the thing about like financial abuse, you don't realise that necessarily that you're even in it until it's too late, because coercive control starts so, it's so subtle, and then they've maxed out your credit cards, then they've done all these things in your name, then they've put you in a position where you kind of feel trapped.
Yeah.
I really think we need to be educating more women about this. Like, I just from personal experience, not realising that things were abuse until after the fact.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people have those conversations because they're ashamed of and afraid to talk about money.
And shame is one of the big blockages that, you know, Melissa talked about. Shame is one of the reasons why we don't get control of these things, why we don't ask the questions, why we don't have the conversations, because we're ashamed.
Mm.
Ashamed that we didn't know what was going on, ashamed that we let things happen, ashamed that we didn't understand a particular situation. But really, we've got to learn to put that aside and be confident to be able to have conversations that are equal and open. You know, she's not saying it's his money and my money sort of thing. You know, there's absolutely great reasons why you combine financial resources, but just having conversations about that in a way that, is healthy, rather than those sorts of controlling relationships that unfortunately do occur.
Yeah. So how can we connect everyone with Melissa so that they can get comfortable having these conversations about money with themselves as well?
So I really love what she shares, particularly on LinkedIn, but also on social media. So look for Melissa Maher Talking Money.
And you can connect with us at womensnetwork.com.au.
You absolutely can.
Next time on WNA Trailblazers.
Never compare yourself to anyone else. You need to do what is right for you, your life, your children. There'll be people that look at me, I suppose, and say, well, if she can do it, I can do it. But that's not the way it works. It works for me. It may not work for other people. Everybody's got their role in society. And I just think the amount of women that compare themselves against other people, it can be a very dangerous game.
Founder and managing partner of KLM Solicitors, Kelly Martin, shares her personal story of starting her own business, having decided to do law differently, and she's got plenty of practical tips to share along the way. WNA Trailblazers, amplifying the stories of women in business. What's your story? We'd love to hear it. Drop us a line on the Contact Us page at womensnetwork.com.au. Hard centre or soft centre? Which one are you? Well, At Davies Chocolates, every centre is packed with flavour to enjoy with your friends, clients and family. And any day is a good day for handmade chocolates from one of Australia's oldest chocolatiers, Davies Chocolates, proud sponsor of the W&A Trailblazers podcast. Order online at davieschocolates.com.au. Thinking about making your own podcast? Welcome Change Media would love to help. Visit welcomechangemedia.com.au. W&A Trailblazers is a Welcome Change Media production.